This interview with David Boyce of the University of Leicester is part of the Jodcast. For the full show, go to www.jodcast.net.
Back in the middle of November, the UK branch of the Students for the Exploration and Development of Space, that's UK SEDS, had their 18th Space Conference at the National Space Centre in Leicester. Now, it was titled Back to the Moon 2006 and covered a whole range of topics to do with going back to the moon. One of the speakers was David Boyce, who's a PhD student at the University of Leicester, and he joins us on the Jodcast. Hi, David.
Hello.
Now, the talk you gave has a very intriguing title. It's UV Astronomy, a Telescope on the Moon. Could you tell us a bit more about it?
Yeah, well, that's what I'm here to talk to you today, astronomy from the moon. Why should we use the moon in this way? Why can't we just use the Earth? Why is the moon a unique environment where we can get scientific data that we can't get on Earth? One of the sort of first things that we should really think about is the fact that light isn't just the sort of light that we can see, but the electromagnetic spectrum extends into higher energy, into like ultraviolet and X-rays, as well as it extends down into lower energies, such as infrared and microwave.
And, of course, into radio waves as well.
And radio waves, exactly, with Jodrell Bank. My particular field is in the ultraviolet. Now, this is the sort of the blue end of blue, just past blue. There are colours that we can't see, and this is ultraviolet, the same wavelength of light that give you sunburn and these sort of things from our sun, and the same that are used in nightclubs. That this wavelength of light is given off from astronomical objects. So it's very interesting to look at these objects. I mean, for instance, you can see the aurora, which is the northern lights on Earth. They glow in the ultraviolet, and then you can study them and study how the sun affects Earth in a way to produce this colour in the sky. And with this knowledge, we've been able to see aurora on Jupiter and on Saturn. But ultraviolet astronomy also continues way past the solar system. I mean, for instance, all hot stars and all these things are very, very bright in the ultraviolet, and we can study the formation of galaxies and how their shapes are created and the sort of the spiral arms and all these sort of interests. Of course, some objects are so hot that they're not particularly bright in the optical wavelengths. They're brighter in the ultraviolet. White dwarfs, the sort of the carcasses of dead suns, are stars that are so hot and that they are very, very bright and interesting in the ultraviolet. So it's very important that we have a look in this wavelength. Now, the problem with ultraviolet astronomy is the fact that the Earth's atmosphere almost completely blocks it. If it didn't, we'd be scorched by the sun, because the sun emits an awful lot of ultraviolet. But our atmosphere almost completely blocks it.
So is it possible to observe with any ultraviolet telescopes on the ground?
No, it's absolutely impossible to observe ultraviolet from the ground. I mean, even high up on mountains, you're still not high enough. Progress has been made to get past this. I mean, for instance, using balloons, we've floated telescopes up to about 42 kilometres. And at that height, you can see through small windows where you can just see a few wavelengths of light at that wavelength. And these are very good, but the problem is with balloons is they, you know, very limited duration. They'll float back down, keeping it stable. I mean, you're floating this in the jet stream, so winds are going to be buffeting your balloon. Your exposure lengths are very, very limited. And, of course, the higher energy end, the extreme ultraviolet, is completely beyond your reach. So to go one better, astronomers have been using rockets to take their instruments into space. Here at Leicester, we've launched the Joint Astrophysical Plasma Dynamic Experiment called JPEX, which is a spectrometer for looking in the extreme ultraviolet. And though this has flown several times and we've got good data from this, you know, with these rockets, they don't stay up very long, so you haven't got a lot of time to make observations.
And how high do these rockets go?
Pretty much the low Earth orbit, but it's suborbital, so it'll go up and it'll come back down without actually entering Earth orbit. Of course, to get past this, you could, you know, just put it into Earth orbit. One of the ways that people have got past this is to put it on Space Shuttle. I mean, the Space Shuttle has a very large cargo bay for scientific experiments, and in the past there was the Payload Bay Observatory called Astro 1, which looked in the ultraviolet. That was flown twice. And then there was a second mission called Orpheus, which was actually called a free-flying pallet mission, where the telescope went up inside the cargo bay, was deployed in space by the robotic arm, it observed for about 7 days, and then it was pulled back in and taken back down to Earth. Now, this was a very good way of doing it, but with the space shuttle only stays up for about, you know, 7 days at a time. So the ideal thing would be to have something observing in the ultraviolet that could stay up for as long as it needed to. in the past we've had telescopes that have done this, the International Ultraviolet Explorer. On the Hubble Space Telescope, not many people realise, but there's also has been an ultraviolet detector on board, so you can see in the ultraviolet. Problem is, nearly all of these have gone past the end of their lives, and we're waiting for the next thing. The problem is that low Earth orbit is not a very good place for ultraviolet astronomy. For instance, there is this thing called the South Atlantic Anomaly, this point where the magnetic field of the Earth sort of dips into low Earth orbit. And as your satellite flies through it, it gets hit by radiation, and this can knock out your satellite. So satellites are often put in safe mode to go through this, and it cuts down the amount of time you can be observing. Also, with the Earth, its atmosphere doesn't just end where you imagine it ending. It actually extends very far out into space in this region of hydrogen and oxygen and nitrogen gas called the geocorona. And this geocorona is almost completely invisible. You'd never see it, but in ultraviolet, it glows. So having your telescope right in the middle of this glow is difficult because you'd be like observing through like a cloud. Of course, with the space shuttle also, the space shuttle pollutes its local environment because it maneuvers using thrusters. And this puts all dust and other material out in the vicinity of the telescope, which the telescope will pick up and it'll take it off. So we need, for ultraviolet astronomy, somewhere that there's no atmosphere, no geocorona, no interference from the Earth's magnetic field. And of course, there's a very good place that stares us in the face every time we step outside on a clear night, and that's the Moon, because the Moon has no atmosphere, it has no magnetic field, and it has no geocorona, so it would be the perfect place for high-energy astrophysics and astronomy. And before we get carried away, it might be worth noticing that Apollo 16 actually did take an ultraviolet telescope to the Moon. It was called the S201 mission, and it was a very small, portable telescope that the astronauts John Young and Charles Duke brought out of the lunar module and placed in the shade of the lunar module. Of course, there was problems with it, and the fact that they found that the battery wouldn't work in the shade. So they had to leave the battery in the sun and the telescope in the shade and thread a wire between the two. Problem was, when they landed the lunar module, the ladder ended up orientating itself, so it went into the shade, which meant they couldn't see the cable they'd laid. And on several occasions, they tripped over this cable on the ground and yanked the telescope. The astronauts, they didn't mention they'd done that until after the scientific results had come through, which is probably a very wise thing to do.
Were they able to get any results?
They got limited success, but it wasn't ever going to be an amazing success. It was a film camera inside a telescope about the same size as the one you could buy in a high street store, but just modified slightly so it could see in the ultraviolet. And so the results were, kind of average, but good for the time and amazing considering that they took place outside of the Earth system, so to speak. The problem is with the Moon. I mean, there are problems with the environment of the Moon. I mean, the Moon is seismically active. There are earthquakes and shudders that go on in the Moon. But, of course, these are nowhere near as strong as those that occur on Earth. I mean, recently in Hawaii, a very strong earthquake hit the telescopes, and they were mostly fine. Some of them required some repair, but mostly they were okay. So that's not a problem.
So what exactly causes the seismic activity on the Moon?
Seismic activity on the Moon? Well, the Moon is still slightly warm inside, so things, are still settling down. Same sort of things that cause seismic activity on the Earth is the fact that inside it's still warm, and on the outside it's cold, and when you have heat trying to moving through a substance, then you're going to have motion of material as well, and this causes the very small slight, much less than Earth. Your main problem on the Moon is going to be the temperature change, because you're going to have about 14 days of complete nighttime, where the temperature is, minus 270 degrees Celsius, and then complete sunshine when the temperature's perhaps plus 300, that's, a 600 degree change in temperature almost instantly. And of course, when they got this film back of this one that they did take to the Moon, they found that there was dust. And they thought, this is strange, the Moon hasn't got an atmosphere. And they realised the astronauts kicking about and driving the Moon buggy had kicked up a load of dust in the vicinity of the spacecraft. So if we ever did take an observatory like this to the Moon, we'd have to put it a long way away from our lunar base, otherwise we might end up ruining our observation. And this isn't just pie in the sky. This isn't just a fanciful idea of moon bases and lunar cities. This is something that is going into review for very, very recently. NASA have announced that they're going back to the Moon. The European Space Agency in China have got plans for the moon. And especially with NASA, they have asked for proposals as for scientific reasons why we should go back. Now, this is one very, very interesting scientific reason, the fact that we can't do this on Earth because Earth blocks out the science that we can get. So the moon is a very unique environment for these sort of observations. So give it 20 years and perhaps, you never know, we might have a telescope on the moon.
That's a really exciting prospect. So whereabouts would you see a telescope being sighted? If it was on the near side of the moon, would it be affected by the Earth being in the sky?
The presence of the Earth in the sky wouldn't necessarily be a bad thing. It means you won't be able to observe stars immediately behind the Earth, but at least then you'll be able to have unbroken communication to the Earth. So it's a bit of a give-or-take situation. You lose a bit, but you gain a lot, so to speak. With the lunar base that they're thinking that they'd like it to be in permanent sunshine so they can rely on solar power. And so they decided that they would most likely put this on the rims of the craters at the very poles of the moon, that they're in constant sunlight. And so it would probably be close to a place like this that they would put it. If it was deployed by human beings, that was, there's no reason why it couldn't be deployed robotically, like Spirit and Opportunity, the rovers on Mars.
It's interesting you should mention robotic deployment. Do you envisage this being something that people would put there and then they would go there to run?
There's no reason why it couldn't be completely remotely controlled. All it has to do is point in the right direction and then change its position to somewhere else. On Earth, we have telescopes that work robotically as it is. I mean, the Liverpool telescope in La Palma does everything from opening the dome to orientating round and pointing at the star, taking the exposure and orientating somewhere else, does this all robotically and via the internet. So once it's there, it'd be relatively straightforward to use. It's just getting it there that's the slight problem.
Sure. Now, apart from just getting there, one of the other problems that's suffered by telescopes like the Hubble Space Telescope is that the mechanics of the telescope eventually wears down and breaks. Do you think telescopes on the moon will need to be more reliable than our current generation of telescopes?
You would think so. With an object on the moon, you wouldn't have to rely on the axis stabilization that the Hubble needs. The Hubble always needs to be pointing in the right direction. So it has reaction wheels that keep it orientated, so it's always looking right. And these, because they constantly need to be moving, they wear out after a time. And these are the things that break our satellites, that their guidance goes. On the moon, you have a very fixed position, so you don't need that technology to be running for 18 years before it breaks. You only need very occasional movement, and so your telescope would have a much longer life on the moon, you would expect, than in a low Earth orbit.
Okay, so lunar telescopes is something that I would like to see. How long do you think we'll have to wait until we see one?
Well, perhaps in our lifetime. Perhaps. I'd look forward to it. There'll be a lot of science to gain from it.
Well, we'll keep our fingers crossed, and if you ever find yourself building an ultraviolet telescope on the moon, we hope you'll come back and tell the Jodcast all about it.
Oh, you can count on it.